Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Eight texts in a day is a lot from somebody who might, I already support you. You've already got my vote. I'm already sending you money.
Frequent texts from political campaigns are irritating some Alaska voters. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 31st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, homeless service providers in Fairbanks say more and more people are coming from Anchorage.
It's just astonishing how busy we've been, and these are just straight up summer numbers that are not stopping.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The former executive director of the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights, which investigates complaints of discrimination, says she herself was fired after less than a month on the job as the result of discrimination. That's according to Marilyn Stewart's lawsuit against the commission filed Thursday. Stewart alleges that because she is Black, a woman, and a military veteran, two former commissioners convinced others to vote to terminate her employment in 2019. The lawsuit says on Stewart's first day on the job, she learned her pay was significantly less than that of her predecessor, a white woman. So Stewart reached out to the Division of Administrative Services in the governor's office about the difference. What followed, according to the lawsuit, was a tense meeting with the commissioners. Stewart claims the commission chair at the time called her incompetent and said that an Alaska Native person would be better qualified for the job. According to the lawsuit, the commission chair was upset that Stewart had gone around the commission to discuss her pay. At another meeting, the commission voted 4-3 to fire Stewart. The lawsuit alleges the commission chair had made statements about preferring to work with men and Alaska Native people, and that another commissioner disliked Stewart because of her past military service. Stewart declined to comment, and her attorney said the lawsuit spoke for itself. The State Commission for Human Rights referred questions to the Department of Law, who, through a spokesperson, declined to comment, except to say that the allegations would be addressed in court. Are you getting a lot of text messages from candidates running for office? Well, you're not alone. Campaigns are no longer just using the traditional mailer or TV ad to reach voters. Now they're increasingly popping up on your cell phone. While campaign workers say it's a better way to reach more voters, some people aren't comfortable with the frequency of candidate texts they're receiving. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
For some voters, the text messages from political campaigns don't seem to stop.
I feel like my phone is constantly blowing up with texts, particularly from Mary Peltola's campaign.
That's Carrie Harris, an Anchorage healthcare worker. Harris says she supports Peltola, the incumbent in the race for Alaska's sole U.S. House seat. She's donated to the campaign several times. Still, the texts are just too much.
Eight texts in a day is a lot from somebody who I already support you. You've already got my vote. I'm already sending you money.
She's not the only one. Frequent campaign texts like the ones dogging Harris are becoming more common across the country. Candidates know your name. They're wishing you a happy Halloween and reminding you to vote, preferably for them. According to data from RoboKiller, an app that helps to block and screen spam calls, Americans received more than 900 million political texts in just September of this year. So, how do campaigns get your phone number? Peltola campaign manager Anton McParland says a lot of times people willingly give their numbers to the state of Alaska when they register to vote.
That data is made available to campaigns to be able to engage in voter contact, voter education, helping people keep informed about both like the processes for voting and then also about the candidates and the issues.
McParland says people also provide their phone numbers when they volunteer for campaign events. But that's not the only way campaigns can get your phone number.
It's all being done right under everyone's nose.
That's Jim Lotzfeld, a political consultant who's currently working with two political action committees, one supporting Peltola and the other incumbent U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. He says there's a burgeoning market to buy phone numbers, and many people give them up willingly. You may have given up your phone number to a shoe store's website when you last checked out.
A lot of this stuff where you voluntarily have given out your name and your information and your number is then aggregated and sold to companies who then use it to sell to political campaigns.
He expects campaigns will rely more and more on texting to reach voters as they move away from the more legacy models like calling landlines or buying print ads.
Like everything in the digital space, it's just ramping up more and more and more.
Lotzfeld says that's come with some resentment from voters.
Political efforts are always sort of trying to get to the voter, and the voter realizes this. And the voter, you know, does some avoidance of the onslaught of messaging.
That avoidance can come in the form of simply ignoring texts, opting out, or using message blocking software. McParland with the Peltola campaign says he understands that frustration from voters.
We certainly receive the anecdotes of folks who are feeling that fatigue. And for every person that expresses that sentiment, I can point to others who express such appreciation for the information that's being provided.
McParland says the old way of campaigning revolved around a circuit of campaign events every election cycle. Things like news interviews, knocking on doors, and going to meetings with businesses and community groups. He says sending texts allows campaigns to reach people who previously could have been passed over.
Rather than campaigning in these very static ways that we had been doing for decades, now folks, voters are more available. We can actually engage with more voters than we ever were able to before.
Both McParland and Lotzfeld say getting texts from campaigns likely isn't going away anytime soon. In the meantime, Harris, the Peltola supporter who's getting too many texts, has a suggestion. She wants campaigns to decrease frequency and increase honesty. Here's her dream campaign text.
This is the way the game goes. The candidate with the most money is going to win. And if you want these issues that are important to you to, you know, end up being taken care of on whatever stage I'm going to end up on, then you just got to send me money. So click this link really quick. If you want to send $10, click this one right here. If you want to send $20, and then we'll stop bugging you.
In that case, she says, if a person already donated like her, the campaign could leave them alone. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Gubernatorial candidates Bill Walker and Les Guerra took the unusual step Friday of releasing a joint online advertisement against their Republican opponent, incumbent Governor Mike Dunleavy. Walker, an independent, and Guerra, a Democrat, have both said they are running to unseat Dunleavy. The ad, featuring Walker's running mate Heidi Dreiges and Guerra's running mate Jessica Cook, says both campaigns would rather the other side win than elect Dunleavy.
We're uniting because our teams agree. Alaska can't afford four more years of Mike Dunleavy.
Both Lieutenant Governor candidates describe cuts to state services under Dunleavy's administration and the governor's opposition to abortion rights. In a ranked choice election, both the Walker and Guerra campaigns say they are relying on each other's second place votes to win. Together, they made up just under half of the primary election vote.
So whether you support Team Guerra Cook or Team Walker Dreiges,
we urge you to rank the other team second.
With ranked choice voting, it's going to take all of our votes to beat Dunleavy.
The joint ad comes days after a shakeup in the governor's race. A former executive assistant filed a lawsuit against the fourth candidate, Republican Charlie Pierce, alleging he sexually harassed her. A few days later, Pierce's running mate, Edie Grunwald, dropped out of the race. In response, Dunleavy's campaign released a statement saying his ticket is voters' only viable option. Both the Walker and Guerra campaigns say they see paths to victory through the ranked choice system. They say they are not concerned about the possibility Dunleavy could win outright with more than 50% of the vote. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a pet snake escapes a Dillingham classroom twice.
I couldn't really believe what was going on because how is that even possible? He's in a giant cage, you know, with a lid that has books on top of it.
That snake is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Voting in the general election? Here are key deadlines you need to know. First, in-person voting begins on October 24th. Want to vote absentee? You must request your ballot by October 29th. Last is Election Day. You must vote or submit your ballot by November 8th. Visit elections.alaska.gov to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
Devin Mitchell will start work as the head of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation on November 8th, a corporation spokesperson said Thursday. The Alaska Beacon reports that Mitchell, currently the acting commissioner of the Alaska Department of Revenue, was selected to be the executive director by the corporation's board of trustees earlier this month. The corporation is in charge of managing the investments that make up the nearly $74 billion Alaska Permanent Fund. That's the source of between half and two-thirds of Alaska's general purpose state revenue. Mitchell replaces Angela Rodell, whom the board fired in December of last year. That firing, which came after the corporation's best performing year on record, sparked a legislative investigation. That inquiry concluded late last month and found the firing was based on a deficient evaluation process, but was justified by trustees' personal experiences and lack of confidence in Rodell. Mitchell will be paid $350,000 per year. That's slightly less than the salary Rodell earned in 2021. Still, Mitchell is likely to remain one of the highest paid public employees in Alaska. In Fairbanks, local agencies are serving more homeless people. And service providers say many of them are coming from Anchorage and the Matsu area. Providers shared their concerns at a Fairbanks Housing and Homeless Coalition meeting last week. KUAC's Robin reports.
Summer, not winter, is usually the busy season for Breadline, the free soup kitchen on Gaffney Street in Fairbanks. Executive Director Hannah Hill says more people usually start coming in April, peak around July, and start slowing down after August. That's not happening this year.
It's just astonishing how busy we've been, and these are just straight-up summer numbers that are not stopping at all right now.
The Breadline's Stone Soup Cafe is serving around 200 free meals every weekday. Hill says September was the third month in a row when client numbers went up.
And that is really abnormal, barring only the first year of the pandemic.
In that year, 2020, the fall increase jumped 42% for the soup kitchen. This year, Hill attributes part of the increase to new people as folks migrate north from Anchorage and the Matsu. David Adams works with another nonprofit service provider, Fairbanks Native Association.
We have just seen a huge spike in homeless coming in asking for resources. It's a new crowd. A lot of them are getting tickets from Anchorage and coming up here to Fairbanks.
Fairbanks Reentry Case Manager Marsha Oss says restructuring of services in the Anchorage municipality has left clients there confused.
I think what's happening in Anchorage is they're not communicating with the population that needs these services. I think in Fairbanks, we get the message out.
Word is out that you can get warm at Breadline. Hannah Hill says the lack of a warming shelter in Fairbanks is the other reason that they're seeing more clients. The No Limits Reentry Housing Program had a warming station on South Cushman, but it had to close and hasn't found a new home yet. The last two winters, the J.P. Jones Center also hosted a daytime warming station, but they haven't opened this winter. Hill says there is no low-barrier shelter option in this town, so people are, quote, colder, hungrier, and more scared.
We need warm clothing items, like if you got hand warmers or gloves, we need them in a real bad way.
The coalition is planning to join the federal annual point-in-time count of sheltered and unsheltered people experiencing homelessness on January 30th, 2023. Money from HUD, the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, depends on an accurate count. Kara Carlson is the coalition's chair. She says the coalition will have a day-long event called Project Homeless Connect to get people help. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
A program that aims to train rural pilots to serve Alaska's bush communities opened a new facility in Anchorage this month. Reporter Emily Schwing has more.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony for CKT Aviation's new hangar at Merrill Field in Anchorage was short and sweet. The new hangar is now the central spot for students interested in pursuing a career in aviation. CKT owner and certified flight instructor Jamie Clays told a crowd of nearly 60 people there are holes to fill when it comes to aviation in rural Alaska.
There's a lack of service there due to pilot shortages, due to a mechanic shortage.
CKT Aviation contracts with Alaska Excel to provide pilot training to students from communities off the road system. Alaska Excel offers additional intensive courses beyond general high school curriculum to students from rural Alaska school districts. Lori Evan graduated from high school in Upper Kalskag last year. She first started taking classes in Excel's aviation program when she was in seventh grade.
They help with career paths and colleges, scholarships, and aviation was one of my favorites because I actually flew a plane, like, unexpectedly, and I flew it all by myself, and that, like, inspired me to come and do more, and it was my goal for years.
According to the Pilot Institute, only 8% of commercial pilots in the U.S. in 2021 were women. That number is even lower among Alaska Native women. Evan says her goals to one day fly commercially in and out of the Kuskokwim River village where she grew up.
It's going to be really amazing. Everybody's going to be so proud of me, especially my family. I'd love to achieve that goal, to get home and show my mom what I've achieved.
Lee Ryan is the president of Ryan Air, an Alaska-based airline that serves most of Western Alaska. He says he wants to hire pilots who grew up just like he did, off the road system in Unalakleet.
And they understand the importance of safety, the importance of one foot in front of the other, the importance of navigation, situational awareness, the culture. They get it, right? So it makes it so easy to serve the people you're trying to serve. So it's like, it's the missing piece of the pie.
Ryan recently hired one commercial pilot out of Alaska's Excel program, and he's got his eye on the progress of at least one other. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction with over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience. Your future is in your hands, whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level. Discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage. Voting in the general election? Here are key deadlines you need to know. First, in-person voting begins on October 24th. Want to vote absentee? You must request your ballot by October 29th. Last is Election Day. You must vote or submit your ballot by November 8th. Visit elections.alaska.gov to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the law that prohibits killing marine mammals. There is an exception for Alaska Native people, and now the federal government works with tribes to manage animals for subsistence use. On St. Paul Island, there's a model for how this kind of partnership might guide Alaska's marine mammals and the people who depend on them through dramatic climate shifts. The tribal government there works with federal fisheries biologists to manage stellar sea lion and fur seal populations.
I think it's actually just gotten better as the years have gone in. We do have weekly meetings with them and, you know, try to keep up to date on things happening here.
Aaron Lestenkoff is a hunter and an island sentinel. Those are tribal members who monitor hunting and stranded marine mammals on St. Paul Island. Federal biologists work only seasonally on the island, but sentinels are there year-round. Lestenkoff says the changing climate has actually made fur seals more available in the last 10 years. They used to leave in the winter, but now some of them stay year-round. The tribe worked on an update to local regulations so hunters could take advantage of the longer seal season. Lauren Devine directs the Ecosystem Office for the tribal government on St. Paul. She says that federal regulation change was a milestone.
This is something that addresses our tribal member concerns, is led and funded by our tribal government as the lead entity.
She says federal management needs to do more to keep up with climate change, but recent impacts of these federal partnerships have given her hope for the future. Traffic was a top concern when the Sitka Assembly and the Local Planning Commission met to review survey results following the biggest cruise year the community has ever seen. The 2.5-hour meeting covered a lot of ground, but as KCAW's Catherine Rose reports, the most significant update came from the owner of Sitka's private cruise terminal, who expects another 100,000 visitors next summer.
There's no question Sitka saw a record-breaking cruise season in 2022, though it didn't end up being quite as big as predicted. 383,000 cruise passengers visited Sitka over the summer, compared to the 480,000 Sitka anticipated at the beginning of the summer. But still, the summer looked quite different from previous years, and that came with benefits and drawbacks. City Planning Director Amy Ainsley said they're still awaiting sales tax returns for the final part of the season, but from April through June, Sitka took in around $6.2 million in sales tax revenue. Almost $2 million more than the same period in 2019. 2023 and beyond are set to be even bigger. Sitka Sound Cruise Terminal owner Chris McGraw says 510,000 passengers are expected to disembark at his dock next summer, which is nearing the terminal's maximum capacity.
My opinion is growth will flatten out primarily because dock space is becoming limited. And unless Sitka builds another dock, you're not going to see a significant number of ships because the large ships do not tender.
But more cruise passengers in town will require more accommodations. This summer, that included things like temporary bathrooms and more trash service, and closing Sitka's main thoroughfare to vehicles. One of the biggest issues city staff reported from the community survey was traffic. Of the 600 Sitkans surveyed, many were concerned about pedestrian safety and congestion. McGraw said he shared concerns around congestion and recommended a solution. Use the Baranoff Elementary School as the drop-off point for the cruise shuttles.
Ultimately, what I see going forward is needing to spread things out a little bit. Because I think the comments that everybody's hearing, the negative comments, are congestion.
McGraw said the tour buses that shuttle passengers downtown carry 60 people each. That's around 67 round trips a day to move 4,000 cruise passengers. The Baranoff Elementary plan would shorten travel time somewhat and put fewer buses downtown. Assemblymember Tor Christensen pressed McGraw about the congestion problems.
Why do you think it's the city's responsibility to fix your problem with the congestion?
I don't. If the city wants to sell me half of the Baranoff playground, I'll buy it. Or if there's another piece of property that I could buy for shuttle operations, I would buy it. I'd be happy to have a private shuttle drop-off downtown. So I'm not looking for the city to fix my problems. It's in the best interest of everybody to have a efficient shuttle operation where people don't have to wait. Traffic impact is minimized. And, you know, that's my goal going forward.
McGraw also said distribution of the tourists will ease traffic. He's partnered with Sciatica to open a tourist attraction near the terminal on 17 acres of land leased from the city. It's expected to take some of the pressure off downtown next summer. Nevertheless, it's likely more work remains to be done to determine whether Sitka has reached its capacity, regardless of how widely visitors are dispersed. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
It's Halloween, and things are going smoothly for fifth graders at Dillingham Elementary School. But the students in one class and their teacher had a bit of a fright at the start of the year when the class pet snake escaped twice. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports the experience has taught the kids about reptiles and something about overcoming their fear of the unknown.
It all started when Dillingham Elementary School's principal, Nick Tweet, sent an email to staff asking if anyone would be willing to adopt a few classroom pets, including a snake named Thomas.
I volunteered to take on Thomas. He's probably a 4 or 5 foot ball python. Nick refers to him as low-key because he doesn't need a lot of maintenance. But yeah, he's really sweet, and I was just really excited to get to learn about this snake.
Haley Balduk is a fifth grade teacher. It's her first year at the school district, and she was happy to take care of Thomas.
Usually in the morning when I come in, I just bend down and look in his cage and I say, "Hi, Thomas."
But when Balduk checked on Thomas on the first day of school, he wasn't there.
I couldn't really believe what was going on because how is that even possible? He's in a giant cage, you know, with a lid that has books on top of it. So he had escaped.
After hours of searching, Thomas was found in a box of markers. Balduk was relieved. Having a snake in the classroom is a new experience for many of the students. Colby Klaus admits she wasn't thrilled.
At first, I was like scared of Thomas because I don't like snakes. So then the teacher started talking about him, how he's like a python and like he's not poisonous. So then I'm like, oh, I want to like touch him now. And then like, but like, I don't think you're really supposed to.
Her classmate, John Henry Timmerman, is still learning things about Thomas.
All I so far know is that he's defanged and he's pretty much a nice snake that likes to randomly at random times climb onto its, like slither, not climb, they don't have arms or legs. Mm-hmm. He's onto his box, his little log.
While these elongated reptiles are new to some students, this isn't Carmen Johnson's first time seeing a snake up close. Unlike some of the others, Johnson has no reservations about having Thomas in the classroom.
I love snakes.
That's so cool. What do you love about them?
They're just cool. Like, how can they slither around the floor and stuff without no legs? And they just have like a long tongue with like a triangle shape in the middle. And they make a cool sound.
What do snakes sound like?
Like a slithery little snake.
Kenya Davis also saw a pet snake in class a couple years ago. She was a little ambivalent, but she's observed how Thomas behaves in different situations. And it turns out that he gets scared of things, too.
He's scared of loud noises, and he goes in his tiny box, and he only gets out when it's quiet.
At the elementary school, a few days after his first escape, Thomas was back in his aquarium-like box next to the teacher's desk.
We have to have really heavy stuff on top because of the whole like getting out situation. So now I have lots of books and a giant plank that goes on top of his cage. And I'll move it so you can see him.
During class a few days later, the students demonstrated their knowledge of snake sounds.
Will you guys do your best to make a snake noise?
Yes.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Thomas is now settled in his home. The students are also happy he's back, at least for now, and are looking forward to learning more about him. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
That's all for this spooky edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley sent to the grave early, killer Kavitha George and Emily the Sword Schwing in Anchorage, grim raping Robin in Fairbanks, scary Claire Strempel in Juneau, Catherine Rose from the dead in Sitka, and Slytherin Izzy Ross in Dillingham. Our news director is Gory Laurie Townsend. Our editors are Annie the Axe Fight and Tyrannosaurus Tegan Rex Hanlon. Audio engineering tonight by the diabolical Dave Emmert. The crafty cat-like Katie Anastas is our producer. I'm Casey the Gravedigger Grove. Happy Halloween!
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks with 400 guest rooms and 1,700 square feet of meeting space. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.